From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm David Andrietta, in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made August 26th and 27th, a week from today, when the New York State Public Service Commission will host a public hearing regarding proposed rate increases for RG&E and NYSEG. Both companies are subsidiaries of Avangrid, and they propose raising rates for their customers across New York in each of the next 3 years. The proposal, though, is about more than just your gas and electric bill going up. It is part of what has been hailed as a landmark agreement by stakeholders. And by stakeholders, I mean the utilities, environmental groups, concerned citizens, and social justice activists, in which RG&E and NYSEG have pledged to cease expanding their natural gas infrastructure, wean customers off the fuel, and cancel plans for two new pipelines. No regulated utility has ever agreed to cap the use of natural gas, much of which is used for heating homes and businesses. The pledge has been widely considered a victory for environmental groups that had been pushing the companies to scale back their use of natural gas. But make no mistakes, the representatives of the same groups want the utilities to go further. To that end, the Rochester People's Climate Coalition is hosting what it's calling a rate case action social tomorrow, virtually, of course, in which anyone interested can learn how to make their voices heard at the upcoming Public Service Commission's public hearings. And everyone should be interested, if not in chiming in, at least in understanding the basics of this proposal. Because, yes, it's about what comes out of your pocket, our monthly energy bills, but it's also about climate change. It's about innovation. And it's about what we value and prioritize as a society. To help us unpack all of that and the details of the upcoming public hearings and Action Social are my guests. Let's welcome to the program Michael Jameson. Michael is the Senior Manager of Corporate Communications in New York for RG&E and NYSEG. Michael, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you for agreeing to spend some time with us on this important matter.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Also joining us is Christian Van Horwegee, a member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, a group that had a significant hand in bringing many of the specifics of this proposal about. Christian, it's a delight to speak with you today.
Thanks for having us.
You got it. And we have Amanda Richardson. Amanda is the co-chair of Metro Justice's Rochester for Energy Democracy campaign. Amanda, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Great to be here.
Michael, I'd like to turn to you first as a spokesman for RG&E and NYSEG to walk us through some of the highlights, as the utilities see them, of what's being proposed here. But before we do that, I want to run down for listeners how we got to that point. So if you don't mind, I'll do my best to sum it up, and you can grade me on a scale of A to F. Does that sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right. And I promise, whatever your grade is, I take rejection well. So this proposal is essentially the settlement of a rate case that RG&E and NYSEG brought to the Public Service Commission. And a rate case, for listeners who might not be familiar with the term, is a process by which utility companies looking to raise rates present their plan to a utility regulator, in this instance, the Public Service Commission, which discerns whether the increases are justified and approves or rejects them. In New York, this typically happens every 3 years. And this process is a public process in which anyone, concerned citizens and groups like Rochester People's Climate Coalition and Metro Justice, can get involved and push back. And push back, people do. This settlement was the product of negotiations between RG&E and NYSEG and 20 different parties, according to the utilities. And the last step for this settlement is before the settlement is approved by the Public Service Commission, which is expected, it is expected to be at this point, is a public hearing. And that's what's happening next week on August 26th and 27th. How did I do, Michael?
I think you did pretty well. You know, a couple of things I would add is, you know, for our companies, we actually did not raise rates, you know. So you said every 3 years, but we actually held rates firm. So, you know, customers, this is a new rate increase being proposed after many, many years of holding rates firm.
When was the last rate increase? Do you recall?
So the last rate case that we went through was in 2016. And then we decided not to file a new rate case when that rate case expired. And as you mentioned, we filed a new case last year.
Okay. So let's get down to brass tacks then about what this proposal is.
Yep.
RG&E and NYSEG CEO Carl Taylor has said of the settlement that it, quote, puts customers first. end quote, and provides relief to customers during the pandemic, while reaffirming the company's commitment to build more, quote, economic, social, and environmentally sustainable communities. Michael, how does the settlement do all of those things? What are the highlights as the utilities see them?
Absolutely. So I think there's a lot of benefits here for customers. You know, as you mentioned in your opening, you know, this agreement has support from a number of stakeholders, from customer groups to industry, governmental and environmental interests. More than 20 parties signed the settlement, including the RPCC with respect to the gas case. But in terms of the highlights, first and foremost is the COVID-19 relief. So this came after months of discussions and thoughtful reflection with our stakeholders about how the companies can best serve our customers in light of COVID-19. And first and foremost, it provides $30 million in relief for the company's most vulnerable residential and small business customers. The money is going to be distributed through automatic $100 bill credits. It'll be done in three phases, and it's going to start with an initial pool of roughly 133,000 customers. In addition, as part of the COVID-19 response, we're going to continue to maintain an arrears forgiveness program as part of the low-income program. And then also, we've instituted a more flexible deferred payment agreement program. So first and foremost, a very customer-friendly proposal put forth by the companies. Second is absolutely our support for New York's clean energy future. As I think
this,
you mentioned,
this is the environmental aspect of the proposal you're getting to.
Correct. Okay. Correct. You know, I think if you look at it, and you rightly mentioned, you know, the companies have committed to structure our gas system planning with the objection of accomplishing a zero net increase in gas usage. So we're going to be promoting and incentivizing the use of heat pumps. We're going to be placing emphasis on non-pipe alternatives with the goal of helping to reduce natural gas consumption over time in alignment with the goals. And then I think, you know, really important is the investments that we're going to be making on the electric side. You know, the state has big environmental and energy goals, as we all know. The company's gas case in this, you know, reaffirms our commitment to meeting those goals. But in order to meet them, we have to ensure that we have the infrastructure in place to support electrification and to support achieving a lot of the programs that we want to achieve. So, you know, together, the proposal invests $550 million for NYSEG's asset condition program, essentially investing in our aging infrastructure. It invests $309 million in RG&E's asset condition replacement program, makes significant investments in our resiliency program, which is designed to really, you know, combat and face those harsh and frequent storms and improve the resiliency of our distribution system.
Which seem to be happening more and more in regards to the storms.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, if you look at New York, unfortunately, the weather patterns, as you said, right, they're harsher and they're more frequent. But, you know, our resiliency program is designed to reduce the frequency of those outages and the duration of service interruptions. And our investments that will be made from 2020 to 2023, you know, are a pretty significant investment in the system. And then also, you know, on both NYSEG and RG&E, you know, tree trimming is a significant part of this case, more so with respect to NYSEG. You know, NYSEG, over 50% of all outages are a result of trees coming into contact with our equipment. And so, you know, we are proposing to increase from $30 million to $57.2 million our annual distribution system tree trimming program. You know, that's designed to create a program and focus on areas where trees pose increased risk for outages. And it's also going to create a $10 million program for NYSEG and $1.6 million for RG&E to address trees outside of the distribution right away that what we call danger trees that have a potential to disrupt service. So, you know, I think if you look at this rate case as a whole, you know, not only does it provide significant relief for our most vulnerable customers, but it makes the needed investments in the electric system to, you know, not only meet and provide the service that customers expect of us, but also to support a lot of the clean energy goals that we want to meet and support the electrification of society that's going to be necessary to meet those goals.
I want to circle back, Michael, to the $30 million in COVID-19 relief. That will come in, as you said, $100 bill credits in three different phases. And it's expected that it will affect 133,000 customers. Is that right?
Correct.
So
the initial pool.
How will they apply for that? I mean, who among RG&E and NYSEG customers will see that?
Yep. So the good news is, you know, customers aren't going to have to apply for it up front. You know, we are going to start with customers in our low-income programs. But, you know, the reason we've staggered this as three phases is with the understanding that, you know, we want to get the necessary support and relief out to, you know, the customers who need it most right now. And so, you know, the credits will be automatically distributed by the companies, you know, after the rate case is approved. But then also we wanted to ensure that there were additional phases to help support customers that, you know, at the start of the pandemic, they might have been doing okay, and they might not be in our low-income program, but as the pandemic went on, might find themselves now in a different place. So, you know, we've structured this program to provide both immediate assistance and then also ensure that we have the resources to provide, you know, additional assistance in the future if it's necessary.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. So Kristen Van Horgy of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition, do you agree that this settlement puts customers first? You've had some good things to say about the settlement, but I've also read that you want them to go further.
Sure. I just want to start by clarifying our position on the case. So we did sign on to support the gas portion of the case only. And the majority of those 20 signatories referenced were particularly for the gas case. And RPCC, you know, is opposing the electric case. We do not support the rate hikes on the electric side. So through a lot of creativity and collaboration, we were able to accomplish these gains on the gas case, what we've called gas matters, with little to no increase in rates. Unfortunately, that's not the case for the electric side. We weren't able to reach to get where we wanted to go in terms of upgrading the system for electrification. And to be honest, you know, we thought that a rate hike during a pandemic is simply unconscionable. And so, you know, while we appreciate the company's COVID relief efforts, first of all, we don't think they go far enough, that they're somewhat insufficient. And the real sticking point is that this money expended, you know, the companies are legally obligated or legally allowed, rather, to recover those funds in future years. So we are technically still paying for that COVID relief money. And we really wanted the companies to, you know, share the pain with fellow New Yorkers, you know, particularly, you know, in Rochester, we have over 11%. Rochesterians are unemployed in June. And so the company likes to state that their rates are some of the lowest in the state, but that doesn't mean that they're affordable. And in order for, you know, a clean, sustainable future, we need to have clean, renewable energy that is affordable for all New Yorkers. So I just wanted to clarify that point.
Okay. Michael, does RPCC have that right that RG&E and NYSEG can recover the monies?
So the rate case proposal submitted by the companies allow cost recovery for certain expenditures by the company. So, you know, there are cost recovery mechanisms within the case. But again, I think, you know, the key is as we look at what we tried to do here with the joint proposal that we filed is balance the need for immediate relief, which I think we've accomplished here through the $30 million fund that we'll be creating, with the needs of the system and the investment that we have to make in order to achieve many of the goals that Kristen has outlined and that the company has talked about. And, you know, I think this proposal does a good job at balancing the immediate needs of customers and providing that relief with also the needs of the system and the investments that need to be made.
Do the companies feel that it is, you know, quote unquote, to use Kristen's term, sharing the pain? Is it taking that step?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, I can tell you that certainly the company has tightened its belt, sharpened our pencils, and, you know, looked at really what projects, you know, could potentially be delayed, what projects need to move forward, and how we can ensure that every dollar that we collect from customers is going to be used to benefit them. So to the extent that we're sharing the pain, I think we absolutely have. And I think, you know, the proposal put forth uses our resources in a really efficient and effective way to provide the most bang for customers' buck.
Kristen, you mentioned NYSEG and RG&E's rates. I have a breakdown here in front of me. And indeed, they are the lowest among the lowest in the state. Now, you had said that doesn't mean that they're affordable, but just to give listeners some perspective here on that, RG&E, this is for a typical residential customer using 600 kilowatt hours per month. RG&E currently about $51 per month. This is according to the utility. By contrast, Con Edison, serving most of New York City, that's $99 a month. Central Hudson, $80 a month. Orange and Rockland, $79 a month. National Grid, $59 a month. RG&E again at $51, and NYSEG at $45. And after the proposed rate hike takes place, we're looking at, according to the company, if I have this right, $60 for an RG&E customer and roughly $57 for a NYSEG customer. Is that about right, Michael, what the company's projecting?
That's correct. And the $60 is after the third year of the rate case.
Correct. All right. So, yep. Kristen, actually, I'd like to just circle back to you and let you understand. Explain to listeners what RPCC's involvement was in the case. RPCC, Rochester People's Climate Coalition, was a formal intervener. What does that mean? What does that entail?
Certainly. It means and entails a lot of paperwork and emails. the learning curve is steep, but we are, you know, making our way and figuring this process out. And to be honest, it was actually a really good learning experience to understand how our energy infrastructure, you know, is funded and how the whole system works. And we would encourage continued participation by all community members in this process, if not as formal interveners in the party, participating in these public statement hearings next week. But as a formal intervener in the party, you know, you can file testimony, which we did, you know, arguing that investment in gas is an unwise, both environmentally and economically speaking. You can submit discovery requests and ask the other parties questions about, you know, their positions. You can participate in the settlement negotiations, which we very much did, you know, putting forth our case as to why, you know, gas is not a good investment, you know, why our energy future needs clean renewables. And, you know, you can file all sorts of different, you know, reply briefs and statements of support and opposition, which we also did. And so that's what it means, in brief summary, to participate as a formal intervener in the rate case. And to be honest, I think that in this instance, you know, it really did pay off. And it was not solely Rochester People's Climate Coalition. There were several other small nonprofit environmental groups from throughout NYSEG territory. And, you know, although we didn't always share or see eye to eye on all the different issues and topics, I think we did a really good job of, you know, and in collaboration with the company, you know, coming to an agreement that while we don't, you know, that we, on the gas case, that we, you know, think is a very good start. But we'd like to, you know, we like to say that this is the floor, not the ceiling.
Okay.
And that, you know, in order to meet not only the goals set out in the CLCPA, the state's climate legislation, but really in terms of the science of climate change, you know, we need to be acting quickly. You know, we implore the Public Service Commission and the governor's office, you know, to provide some guidance, you know, and some regulations for the utilities on how to best transition quickly but also equitably to a clean energy future.
You'd said that your intervention and that of the other parties involved in this really paid off. And by that, I'm assuming that you mean that the utilities listened? Do you feel that they heard you and incorporated your arguments into this proposed settlement? Or was it a foregone conclusion that they were going to do this anyway, and it's, you know, it's just sort of a game of listening? Or do you feel that they truly heard you?
Well, you know, settlement negotiations are just that. They're negotiations, you know. And if you read our original testimony, we'd certainly had, you know, far grander goals in terms of gas reduction. But, you know, we came, after a lot of back and forth, to a settlement where, you know, we could say, okay, let's at least, you know, if you read the company's original filing, they have nothing in there about limiting gas, and in fact had all sorts of proposals for building out the gas infrastructure, including those two pipelines you mentioned in NYSEG territory in your opening. And so in some ways, you know, we do think that it was not a foregone conclusion, right, that, you know, reaching zero net growth in gas was really a compromise for both parties. And you know, we do commend the company for taking the first step. There are no other utilities in the state who have done that. But like I said, we need continued leadership on this front, and we would encourage RG&E and NYSEG to, you know, push the envelope, right, to really be doing more for aggressive climate action.
So it sounds like the utilities heard you loud and clear on the gas side. What was the obstacle on the electric side, as you see it, rather than corporate obstinance? I mean, what were the obstacles that you could point to that the utilities argued back that said, hey, we can't meet some of these demands?
Sure. Well, you know, we were not primed to sign on to the gas case, or the electric case, rather. Anyway, and then the pandemic struck, you know, right as we were wrapping up our negotiations. And as I mentioned, you know, a rate hike during a pandemic is simply unconscionable.
I just want to interject here and say that this has been going on for some time, right? I mean, this rate case went before the Public Service Commission at some point last year. I believe it might have even been last summer. Is that right?
Correct. I believe the filing date on the letter is late May of 2019.
Okay.
And you know, to the company's credit, they did continue negotiations to address COVID.
Okay. And the sorry, go ahead.
In terms of, you know, our opposition to the electric case, you know, we just feel like the priorities are a little bit wrong here. You know, one of the big costs in the case is nearly $500 million on what are called smart meters. And you know, the benefits to customers we don't see are really that readily apparent, in terms of overall, like, reliability, particularly right now. Right, we just think that this is the wrong time to be spending, you know, nearly half a billion dollars on this technology. Particularly, as Michael indicated, there has been quite a bit of what I would call neglect in terms of vegetation management, and, you know, really getting us ready for the grid we need for that, you know, clean energy future. And, you know, again, we feel that in some ways the companies should, you know, share the pain, if you will, for these upgrades, right? And we feel that you know, particularly when we look at things like the 8.8% return on equity that's guaranteed on projects like the smart meters, that, you know, we would have liked to have seen, you know, a little bit more concern about the way that these rate increases are going to impact Rochesterians, you know, particularly given, you know, my concern is particularly given the high rate of poverty in the city.
Sure. We have an email from Linda in Penfield who says that a $50 or $60 rate hike proposed by the utility companies is for her one less doctor visit, one less week of groceries, one less prescription filled. So those are real concerns for a lot of people in Rochester and Monroe County and the surrounding area, of course. I'd like to come back to some of the specifics about the proposals, specifically gas and the actual rate hikes and what people will see. But I want to turn to Amanda. Amanda, you helped lead Metro Justice's Rochester Energy Democracy campaign. That's a campaign, as I understand it, is looking to replace RG&E with a public nonprofit electric cooperative, with an eye toward committing to carbon-free energy and phasing out of all fossil fuels. Do I have that right?
Yes. Yep. RED was created in reaction to the climate crisis that continues to result in increased destruction and suffering due to extreme weather and sea level rise and wildfires. And we also recognize that these and other ongoing effects disproportionately harm people of color, indigenous people, and poor people. So one of the reasons that we got involved and filed as an intervener as well in the rate case is that we were seeing something very different than putting customers first, as Michael put it, because we were having discussions with people in Rochester who, although there's a moratorium on shutoffs in the state, they were still issuing the shutoff notices with no mention of the moratorium. So we were talking to people who, like the person that just emailed in, were forgoing medicine and food in order to pay these bills that they thought were going to result in a shutoff. So we didn't see that behavior as putting customers first.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on that. Actually, Michael, could you address that? RG&E customers and ISED customers did get shutoff notices. There is a moratorium. I believe I've read or heard media reports in which RG&E and NYSEG said that, well, you know, they recognize that there is a moratorium and that the utilities would not be shut off. Well, why were they issued? Like, is that a formality? Is that just some sort of payroll or billing department thing?
Nope. And it's a great question. So, you know, first, I think it's important to highlight that NYSEG and RG&E were actually some of the first utilities to announce a suspension of shutoffs. That said, we continue to send disconnection notices to customers because the notice is required for low-income customers to continue to receive certain government assistance programs. So, you know, without that notice, they'd actually potentially lose the assistance that they were getting. So we've always been transparent of our policies with customers when they contact us. We've offered flexible payment options to those that might be struggling. And again, I think, you know, if you look at this proposal that we've submitted before the commission, you know, we're suggesting and proposing to provide, you know, significant relief to our low-income customers.
So anyone who received one of these shutoff notices, they would call, presumably speak to a representative from the utility, and that representative would tell them that you're in no danger of being shut off.
Correct.
Okay. In retrospect, could there have been a disclaimer on the bill?
We've actually made a change to our bill or to the notice. Customers will be receiving or that receive notices moving forward will actually see some different language included in it.
Okay, very good. I have to take a quick break here, but before I do, I want to invite listeners to chime in on the conversation. You can contact the show at 263-WXXI. That's 263-9994. Or by calling 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Of course, you can always email the program at connections@WXXI.org. It's just time for that only break of the hour. So stay with us, and we'll be back with more Connections in just a moment.
I'm Megan Mack. Coming up in our second hour, would you consider volunteering to participate in medical research? According to the New York Times Vaccine Tracker, researchers around the world are developing more than 165 coronavirus vaccines. 31 are in human trials, and one of them is being tested in Rochester. We talk with trial participants and with a local researcher leading the study.
You're listening to Connections. I'm David Andrietta, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about the RG&E and NYSEG rate case settlement with guests from the utilities and environmental groups who applaud and condemn some aspects of the settlement. The settlement will result in your energy bills going up, but the utilities have made unprecedented commitments to cap the use of natural gas, scale back its natural gas infrastructure, and wean customers off the stuff. You know, I want to touch on natural gas for a moment. You know, at what point did natural gas, for so long we had heard that natural gas, of course it's a fossil fuel, but that it was cleaner than coal, it was cleaner than oil, and that it was friendlier to the environment. At what point did it become something that of a concern for the utilities, Michael? You know, a concern to take these steps to scale back. I mean, these steps are unprecedented, at least in New York State.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if you look at the proposal we submitted, it's certainly the most progressive gas case ever submitted in New York. It's probably the most progressive case or one of the most progressive cases ever submitted in the nation. And it's only right because we're New York, right? We typically lead the world on issues like this. And so, you know, I think what the gas case that we filed is really the company's commitment to achieving the state's energy and environmental goals. And if you look at it, you know, what we filed, there's a lot of stuff in there beyond just the gas usage issue, but you know, things like looking at how we can integrate renewables into the system, you know, how we can achieve the goals contained within the CLCPA. So I think our effort was really a commitment to achieving the state's ambitious goals and that we've set forth.
And those goals you're talking about are the State Climate Leadership and Protection Act?
Correct.
Okay. So the two gas pipelines, where were they to be situated, and what were they to be used for? Obviously, for transporting natural gas. But I mean, what was the plan prior to NYSEG and RG&E scrapping the pipeline proposal?
Yep. So, you know, probably not surprising, right? We still have customers that are you know, want natural gas, use natural gas, and we have an obligation to provide natural gas to customers, you know, that use it. Our original proposal, we have some infrastructure that was in need of repair. And so, you know, part of what we looked at is whether or not, you know, it was advantageous from a safety perspective to replace, you know, pipes with additional infrastructure or not. You know, but ultimately, I think, you know, the conclusion is what it is and what we have before us. You know, we decided to, you know, scrap any plans for those projects and, you know, the ultimate outcome is what we have before us.
Sure, sure. So before we get into, I do want to be sure that listeners understand how they can participate in the public hearings and they can participate in the social action that RPCC is staging tomorrow. But before we do that, we still have some time, and I want to circle back to Amanda of Metro Justice's Rochester Energy Democracy Campaign. Again, I mentioned it earlier that you know the ideal for you would be to phase the utilities out completely and replace them with a public nonprofit electric cooperative. What is a nonprofit electric cooperative? Is that something that we see in Fairport or Spencerport, where they have these their own sort of village electric utilities, or is it something more complex than that?
be in Fairport. It's not necessarily an anomaly. There are, 2,000 public power utilities nationwide, but each one is run a little bit differently and will be structured based on where it is and what the people there think is best for the community. So Michael mentioned that every dollar is going to benefit customers, but as Kristen mentioned, there's a almost 9% guaranteed return for their shareholders. In the case of a public utility, it's not for profit. So the $595 million in profit that RG&E made last year, that's money from our pockets as ratepayers. So if we didn't have to fund that, we could fund a lot more things in our community. So it's owned by the community, not for profit, and people have a lot more say in what the rate structure looks like, where the energy is coming from. So it makes it easier to transition to green energy because in the case of RG&E, as they make that transition, as we can see in the rate case, we're having to fund the infrastructure. But with a green transition, without all of that profit on top of it, that we really think that a public utility is best suited for a green transition and to make, as was mentioned earlier, make energy accessible and affordable. Kristen touched on this a little bit, but the energy burden of more than 6% of someone's income is considered unaffordable. And we see people spending 22% or more of their income on energy bills here in Rochester. So we think that it would target a lot of these things, accessibility, affordability, have a democratic governance where people could be involved, and show a just transition for energy workers and giving them training and put more jobs in the local economy.
Amanda, is it a realistic goal? Can you point to anywhere that this has been done before?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Fairport Electric is one example. Also,
that is an example. I think the first part of your response was cut off, so I didn't catch that. At least it was cut off for me.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's okay. So that is an example of what we're talking about.
That is an example. Another one is Anaheim Public Utilities in California. So they have a customer base similar to RG&E. And their rates are about 25% lower than the state average out in California. So like I said, there are a lot of places working toward this or having done this in the United States. So I absolutely think that it's a goal, but it takes a lot of people getting involved. We have to get a referendum on the ballot to authorize a public utility and then get everyone out to vote for it. So it takes a lot of power building in the people.
Okay, but even if there is this referendum, people vote for it, I got to imagine it's a much more complex endeavor than just that in dismantling a utility.
So then the final step in it is to get the grid from RG&E, which, yes, would be a long court battle. We can see out in Boulder, Colorado, they're in the middle of that. So, yeah, it's not easy, but we have, right now there's the priority we're showing is to give millions of dollars to shareholders and investors. But we believe in the well-being of our community, especially during this time. And so it's worth fighting for.
Let's just talk about really quickly what ratepayers are going to see, at least for RG&E. I have the numbers here. That includes either all or most of Monroe County. As I understand it, Michael, the first year, so originally the proposal was that the rate hike would take place in May of 2020. That's obviously passed, and I assume that the delay was pandemic related.
Correct.
Okay. So as I understand it now, they will take place, if this is approved, they'll begin to take place in October of 2020. And under the first year, it'll be 2.4% increase and a 5.2% increase in each of years 2 and 3 for a total of roughly just under 13%, about 13% over 3 years. Is that right?
Correct. On the delivery side of the bill.
Okay. So an email from Paul in we don't know where Paul is from, but he'd like to hear more about the plans for encouraging existing customers to switch from gas to heat pumps. What are the financial incentives that are going to be managed by RG&E and NYSEG? What's happening with that? How will the incentives work? Michael?
Yep. So, again, as I mentioned, as part of this proposal, the companies are going to be promoting and incentivizing the use of heat pumps through financial incentives, and then also, find additional ways to, look at non-pipes alternatives and other technologies to help reduce goals. But, for customers that are looking to make the switch from gas to heat pumps, there'll be incentives from the company for customers that they can take advantage of.
David, if I might.
Sure.
So I'd like to draw Paul's attention to a program that Rochester People Climate Coalition also runs in partnership with the city in Pathstone called Sustainable Homes Rochester.
Okay.
That helps to facilitate that process and also to, educate people about switching to heat pumps and, navigating, the process of tapping into the incentives that are now offered by RG&E but were previously offered by NYSERDA. And I also wanted to point out, this to me is actually one of the biggest wins that I thought came from the gas side of the case, is that we were able to secure a commitment from the company for $750,000 to go towards a heat pump incentive program for low to moderate income households here in Rochester and nonprofits. And the same also in NYSEG territory. And so, our experience has shown that heat pumps are, they are expensive. They're largely, out of reach for many. And
that was
so,
my next question. What is the out-of-pocket cost for that?
That's a very complicated question. It really depends on a lot of different factors.
Okay.
In terms of your home. But, we also encourage, energy efficiency as the first measure on that. But that this additional monies that was secured through the rate case is really, I think, hopefully a step in the right direction. But in the interim and, until this becomes available, I would encourage, your listener to visit the Sustainable Homes Rochester website.
Very good. We have a caller on the line. I'm going to take it now. Hello. Welcome to Connections. Line one. Welcome to Connections.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Who am I speaking with?
Yes. Yeah, Robert Fairport. Hey,
hi, Robert.
It's interesting timing for this discussion because California is experiencing blackouts right now because the power system in California, which includes a fair amount of green power, doesn't power things at night because the power is generated by solar power in the daytime, and even wind is intermittent. And these power sources cannot be saved to be used during peak periods, like at night. So they've had rolling blackouts in California as a result. How do we know that New York State's not going to have rolling blackouts in the middle of the winter when natural gas consumption is at its absolute peak and we don't have the capability to heat with it?
All right. Thank you, Robert. Who wants to take that? Michael or Kristen?
I can jump in here,
okay.
Dave. To answer your question, so the grid operator here in New York that manages the bulk electric system is the New York Independent System Operator, the NYISO for short. The NYISO's job is to ensure the reliability and stability of what we'll call the electric grid. And so the utilities work in partnership with the NYISO, looking at load forecasting, looking at, what we expect usage patterns to look like. And as a result of those efforts and planning together, the NYISO with that real reliability function and the utilities with that delivery function, the customers help ensure reliability of the system. But I think, to take one step further, if you look at some of the innovations that the company is taking here, NYSEG and RG&E, We have a number of studies and programs that we've done. We're looking at EVs, things like EVs, electric vehicles, because, you know, as most of your listeners probably know, by far the greatest emitter of emissions is the transportation sector. So NYSEG and RG&E are proposing a pretty robust build-out of EV infrastructure, but we're also looking at how demand patterns for the consumption of electricity are going to change as a result of that. So as more people buy EVs, you get home from work, you plug it in at night, and, that has an impact on the system, right? Because the system's going to draw more electricity. So the company is really taking an innovative approach at looking at how electricity use is going to change as we adapt and we work to enhance or achieve the state's clean energy goals. And as a result, we have time now to ensure that we have the right programs and in place to help achieve that, but also maintain the reliability of the system to hopefully avoid issues like your caller mentioned.
Thank you, Michael. Speaking of time, I'm running out of time, and I want to make sure that listeners have all the information that they need for to attend or chime in on the public hearings and the social action that RPCC is taking. So as Kristen mentioned, being an intervener in the case, it's a complex issue, and it involves a lot of emails, a lot of paperwork, and the Public Service Commission, let's be honest, it doesn't make it easy for the average person to understand what to do or how to get involved. So, Kristen, why don't you take it away here and tell us what you have on store, RPCC has in store for tomorrow, and then how that translates to the public hearings next week.
Sure. So we're having a rate case action social that will be tomorrow from 5:30 to 6:30, of course, virtually. And the purpose of this is
so
to...
Where can people tune into that?
Of course. So if people would like to go to our website at rocpcc.org, there's information on there, and rate case is part of that, our work. Then there's all of the information that people need, not only to participate in the action social for tomorrow, but also all of the information to register and participate in the public statement hearings that are next week, Wednesday and Thursday.
And I visited the website. It is user-friendly. There are lots of ways to engage, online comments, phone comments, emails, snail mail, and RPCC does a really good job of breaking it down for you. August 26th, August 27th are these public hearings. There are four hearings at 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. each day, but it should be specified that the 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. hearings, the August 26th 1 and 6 p.m. hearings are the ones about the it's about the gas portion of the proposed settlement. Is that correct, Kristen?
Actually, it's about on the 26th. It's about the entire case.
About the entire case,
and then the 27th is supposed to be specifically about there are proposals for office closures, six office closures throughout the territory, walk-in offices, which people increasingly are need to pay their bills.
Sure. Okay. So lots of ways to get involved there. You can visit the Public Service Commission's website. Again, not that friendly, but ROC, it's ROCPCC.org?
Correct.
Okay. You'll find all the information there. I want to take a moment here to thank all of my guests for joining us. And Michael, it's not easy to be sometimes on a panel where, you've got two other panelists who are critical of the utilities, and that's okay. But we encourage and want to foster open debate here. So I commend everyone for coming on, Michael. I really appreciate your being with us. I want to take one last call, real quick. I'll see if I can sneak it in. We've got about another minute and a half here. I've got Manuel on line two. Manuel, what would you like to say?
Yes, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Something that has not come up is the arrangement, outrageous, I would call it, between the, I don't know if it's the governor or the legislature or both that guarantee RG&E an 11% profit yearly, okay, on top of whatever they earn. You understand? It is, to me, outrageous.
I do understand, Manuel, and I'm not familiar with the agreement. Michael, does this ring a bell with you?
No. So, you know, what the joint proposal does allow is the company to make a return on its investment for some of the investments that we make, some of the expenditures. You know, it is within the legal allowance. It's actually the ROE contained within the joint proposal is one of the lowest in the nation in terms of the industry. And, you know, we are allowed to make, you know, a return on some investments. But again, it's one of the lower in the industry. And, you know, it's investments that go toward really bolstering the system and supporting our customers.
Thank you so much, and thank you for listening. I'd like to thank my guest once again, Kristen Van Horwegee, member of the Rochester People's Climate Coalition. Remember, you can participate in their social action tomorrow, rocpcc.org. They'll tell you everything you need to know to participate in the public hearings next week. Amanda Richardson, co-chair of the Metro Justice's Rochester for Energy Democracy Campaign, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Michael Jamieson of RG&E and NYSEG, thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Kristen, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll see everyone next week.
All right. Thanks for listening.